All lines are now bridged.
Hey, thank you. Good morning and welcome everyone to the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force meeting. My name is Seth Pazinski. I'll be serving as the designated federal officer for Lauren Ritchie for today's task force call. So we'll officially call the meeting to order. Let's start with roll call. Please say here. Stephen Lane.
Here.
Ken Komodo.
Here.
Ricky Bloomfield. Amir Fakhouri. Valerie Gray. Anil Jain.
Anil is on the meeting, so he's probably
okay.
Almost here.
Okay.
I'm here. I'm here. Sorry, I was on mute.
Great. Thank you. Les Leonard. Hey, David McCauley.
Here.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Raj Ratwani. Sasha Termet.
Here.
Cheryl Turney. Tina Esposito. Cynthia Fisher. Edward June.
Here.
Victor Lee. Arian Malik. Clem McDonald. Bing Jack Poe.
Here.
Ron Saram. Andrew Truscott. And Scott Weingarten. Okay, any other participants that need to announce themselves if I missed anyone? All right, that completes our roll call. I'll turn things over to Stephen and Ken to begin today's meeting.
Thank you so much, Seth, and we appreciate your pitching in today for Lauren. On the next slide, we have the charge of our task force, which I will not read through. Most of you are familiar with this, and the members of the public that are with us today, welcome. I think we've seen most of you before also, so we appreciate your following this work with interest. Next slide is again the members of our committee. As a reminder, it's good to have all of you here today who have made it. On the next slide is our schedule, and you can see we are up to our October 11 meeting, so we could put a check mark on that one. This is our last scheduled task force meeting. We are presenting our recommendations and report to the HITAC next week. If there is feedback from that that requires us to come back together to address any key issues, I think we will figure out how to do that, but that is not scheduled at this time. And then on the next slide is what we're going to be doing today, which is our final pass through our draft report. And we can switch over to that. Again, I want to really thank the people who have spent time providing input to this document. Clem McDonald in particular has been very busy this week working with his staff member Liz Amos to integrate a number of additional suggestions, which Clem is not yet here to represent himself, but I think we've talked through these and want to bring them forward with the task force. And then others, including Sasha, have provided some recent input. So our plan, insofar as we can, is going to be to get through the remaining comments, knowing that this is our last day. We are not going to plow any new ground, I don't think, today. We do have a plan to try to finalize our report over the course of today and then get that distributed to the HITAC. So if there are open items in a parking lot, we are going to try to pull those together either at the end of the report or in an appendix. We have reassurance from other members of the HITAC that they are enthusiastic to include our recommendations for future attention in the HITECH annual report. I think there is a good sense that that even things that we have not been able to completely resolve here will again see the light of day, and we'll have a chance to evaluate further.
Hey, Steve, this is Clem. I am on the call, but I haven't been able to get connected electronically yet.
Great. Well, it's good to know you're here, Clem, to represent some of your great ideas. So, Ken, any other words to kick us off today?
No, let's finish.
All right. Maybe we can just jump right in. I think the Excel folks have this pulled up almost as big as they can. You might be able to squeeze another 5% out so that people can see it more clearly. But we are in the section at the very top where we're discussing cross-domain recommendations. Above this, we've touched on a few items, but here we are in the section on multiple competing standards. And we observed that there were many standards, and we were trying to suggest that ONC find a balance between moving too quickly and moving too slowly. And Clem had a recommendation to actually strike some language here and make a certain change. And I think it does sort of refine and sharpen our recommendation and take out some extra verbiage. Wanted to bring this to the group for consideration.
It does semantically change the meaning, right? Because before we were saying some of the things that we want to consider, or it may ultimately be better for a problem or constellational problems, and Clem's recommendation just changed it to the only consideration is whether it's an appropriate use. Or in widespread use. For example, that would mean for a non-fire-based approach for that particular use case may not be considered. So I just added such as those that are, right? I just wanted to avoid a case where we say the only consideration for what should ultimately be used in the area is, for example, that it's currently in widespread use.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Ken. I had the chance to sit in on the Gravity Project call yesterday with Terry, and certainly social determinants of health, you know, are not yet in widespread use, and yet they are very important. And so that's a really good point.
Yeah, I'm not against what Ken suggested, but it was when there are two that are competing that are in, you know, that's the decision. If there's nothing in use, then of course it's an open game. But I'm not opposed to what Ken is suggesting.
So are we comfortable with shortening this up a bit with that caveat? Great. All right.
This is David. Can you hear
David.
Me?
David. Yes, and I can see your hand. I apologize.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I think the spirit of what we might want to capture, which I think now that I look at it more carefully, I think you've got, is the thing we wrestled with a good bit in the early days of the standards committee was picking standards or endorsing standards that had never seen any testing in the real world, and that was something we wanted to really avoid. Just because something is a standard doesn't mean it actually is any good. But I think the widespread use maybe captures that here, although I don't know that it has to be widespread. It just needs to be tested in real world use.
I was trying to contrast. If you get two standards, and one of them is, you know, just been invented, and the other one's in wide use, there shouldn't be a challenge about which one to pick. But I mean, we could wrestle with this wording for a long time.
To understand, Clem, what you're saying is, for example, that for a place where direct messaging is in more widespread use than fire, you're saying we should never consider using fire. That's sort of what's implied. Right.
I don't think I meant that, and I don't think I said it. I said when there's competing standards, and I don't know if Direct would be competing with Fire anyway as a direct competitor. Isn't that what the original was?
No, I think so. I think there's a lot of discussion about changing, changing technologies from existing to future. Terry, you have your hand up. You want to jump in?
Yeah, just we're wrestling with the same issue in USCDI. It's sort of what does it take to become technically mature, and what extent does it have to be tested? In a sense, how widespread does that have to be? And I'm wondering if we want to somehow use the same language here.
Do you have language, Terry?
We're going to talk about that this afternoon, Clem.
Okay. Well, I mean, I mean, you know, whenever we get into these word games, we're smithing games, and I don't know that we're going to get done this morning. I wasn't trying to keep everything out, but I was rather trying to. We've been at this and ACK for 10 years now, and the progress until FIRE came along was slow. And I just like to see something happen before I die. So we're glacial. We worry so much about doing it's absolutely right, but we don't get enough done. Well, we are getting stuff done now, so I should take it back. But some of us have been in this business for 20, 30 years, and it's really slow. So I don't think we need ways to make it slower.
Okay, so Ken has added some additional language here. David, you have a comment?
There was quite a bit of discussion about this topic in the Standards Advisory Task Force from a couple of years ago, and there was, as I recall, some language in there around how to characterize the maturity of standards. One option here is to refer back to that work, maybe to the work that Terry mentioned. This is a huge discussion. I mean, we spent hundreds of hours in various task forces on this topic, so I don't think we're going to capture a single sentence that
you got that right. We were both on that committee, and
yeah,
we did the same thing, and we came to some conclusions. It's like we start all over.
But Clem, my memory is that we had some sort of categorical ways to describe and capture the essence of the trade-off issues. I don't have any of it in front of me, but it's not a fresh subject. ONC is deeply familiar with the trade-offs. I'm not sure we need to obsess on this language anymore, but maybe just reference existing ONC work in this area, and then the USCDI is wrestling with it too.
Yeah.
Nothing written we write here is going to change the fundamental debate. Only time.
Okay. Ken, thank you for attempting to wordsmith that. I think we've captured the spirit of Clem's suggestion here, and I think we've got some language that's going to be acceptable. And as you say, we're not going to really shift the game here. So any objections to moving on?
No.
Hearing none. We have another section, a subsection that was added just a little bit down here on patient access to data. This was in response to a long discussion we had when Cynthia was here. And I think this is a simple statement. Ken and I have each contributed to this a little bit. Just the notion that patient access to their own data is critical across domains. So any comments or concerns about adding this language?
No.
Great.
Well, there was some discussion about how fast and all that. Is that still captured?
That's elsewhere. That is. Okay. The next set of comments, again, largely coming from you, Clem, are just a bit down on page 9. Some of this at the top here is simply trying to clarify the distinction between how LOINC and CPT codes are used for the tests versus the values. So I think that's just clarifying language. So if no
and
one...
I'll just make a note there that there was a comment that Clem from and then Liz transposing that it should be values rather than results, and that it's been quote unquote replaced everywhere. It has not been replaced everywhere. So I just added results or values so that we use it kind of synonymously here. If we are really saying that we should not use the term results, we have to do pretty massive editing, and I think it's easier to just say, considering results to be values.
I agree.
Okay.
Great. All right. We've got a number of these that we want to just go ahead and accept here. So the addition of, you know, the specific line code, et cetera, we'll just go ahead and accept all of those. Okay, the next substantive change comes a little bit lower down. We had talked about the IHT SDO document, which has been published regarding using LOINC and SNOMED CT. Liz pointed out to us that there's actually an ONC resource on the same topic, which is probably even more worthy of adding here. Then the question was whether it made sense to list both of these or just one came up. So I think, Clem, you were suggesting maybe even dropping the IHT SDO reference. Personally, I think having them both there is fine, but curious what others think.
Well, let me just clarify. The IHT SDO reference covers a lot of space. It's not just observation as a result, and I think it's useful for that, but it's maybe in the wrong place then. It, when we're talking about just observations and values, I think that it's fairly simple and the ONC specification is pretty good. I mean, it is more it's really more inclusive than just the one from ISGHCO. So I would suggest finding another place for that where there are lots of fields that are relevant to SNOMED.
Well, so this section, we are discussing orders and results, our top priority issues, and the need for consistent encoding of tests and their result values.
But that document isn't targeting that specifically. It's covering the whole standard for where SNOMED should go. So that's why I thought maybe it's not...
I think it's useful to keep it in.
All right.
It's a useful reference. It's not authoritative.
I don't think we're harming anything by including the two references.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Clem. Yeah, but I think we got them in the right order here, highlighting the ONC one first. All right. Down on page 11. Ken, you did some rearranging of this section, or I guess this was on top of Liz's additions and comments. So there's a long comment here. Let me see. Is that on this section?
I think is that from me? We could dispense with one. I meant to get it either gone or skinnier.
Okay. But just to be clear, where we are in our document is policy levers and recommendations related to this need for consistent encoding. And where we've ended up is with a recommendation to accelerate existing LOINC work to represent new codes that have come into use. There's a new reference to the group tables being developed by LOINC. So I think one of the advantages we have is that Clem is very familiar with the work going on at LOINC and the details of that, so referencing some of that. And then there's some change text here recommended where we had consider introducing a standard approach to developing provisional LOINC codes. And Clem, you and I spoke about this at some length yesterday, the challenge of provisional codes and versus using local codes, and sort of how do we really grapple with this whole issue of new tests and methodologies that come online and people want to be able to exchange them before LOINC has done all of their work. And what Clem clarified for me, and I think we'll just discuss here briefly, is the fact that LOINC actually has a process in place to develop pre-release of codes or to pre-release codes that haven't been through the full vetting and finalization process but are available for use. And I think that's very much what we were talking about. I mean, we had referred to them as provisional, but LOINC is already doing this and referring to them as pre-release, and there's actually a reference here to that program. So the proposal was to replace our language about provisional codes with a acknowledgement of the LOINC pre-release process. Ken, you're adding some language above.
Let me delete the phrase saying, hey, support using local codes or other standard codes when there isn't an appropriate link code, and you basically delete it saying, well, Fire supports it. I agree Fire supports it. I think the key here then is to say the EHR and HIT systems that, you know, implement those standards need to make sure they really allow that, because that, you know, even if a standard says it is, if an implementing system treats it as, well, we're still going to just require LOINC, which has historically been the case, that then it sort of defeats the purpose of that being in the standard.
Well, I'm not sure I'm following, but it is a mess when you get into real systems, and that there's not LOINC codes there either. But in places that have them in their labs and send them to them. So there's a whole tangle of realities there. But the thing I worry about is if we have mixed kinds of code systems and people are not encouraged to ask for a code and discuss it, we won't get the standardization. And the reason I really am very negative about, you know, just people making them up on their own and putting them in and calling them LOINC, is that it'll be a total mess. And there's been no motivation for them to submit and, you know, submit the details needed to get it right. So I'm not sure which word you're looking at, because I still can't get on the web version.
Technically this is a namespace problem, and a code includes both the namespace of the code, which should be unique and not duplicated across the industry, and a code itself, which should be unique within the namespace. I think this is a fairly well understood problem. Fire deals with it in the, you know, internet style approach of using URIs for namespace identification.
I'm not getting at the standard piece. I'm getting at the standard implementation piece, where even if a standard binding says extensible, right, where the definition of extensible is if there isn't an appropriate code in that value set or terminology that you can use something else, that doesn't mean an EHR vendor actually supports that. As in, for example, if you have a lab data in your system or some other observation that is not actually, there is no actual LOINC code for it, and you want to map it, it may or may not actually be supported to, for example, expose it through Fire. I think what I'm putting here is, at this point, is non-controversial, just saying, where the standard says it should be extensible, which it is, like, actually provide support for that.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
I mean, in the real world with EHRs, almost all the codes that are actually in use in the internal transactions are local codes in some sense. They're often, you know, locally generated codes. Where it matters for interoperability is when they get mapped for interchange between systems. And that's when this issue comes up. If there's no mapping for the local code to an appropriate LOINC code, because either the LOINC code doesn't exist or people don't understand the right mapping, then they need a consistent way to indicate that they're sending you something that isn't mapped to LOINC. It's, in fact, mapped to a local space.
Yeah.
But I think all the companies do that already.
Ken, yeah. I don't understand your introduction of this term in Fire here. What are you? Help me understand that.
Yeah. So realistically, I mean, we're just talking about Fire right now, right? We're not talking about, say, HL7.
We're talking about standard need for consistent encoding of tests and result values in standard codes.
Okay, so let me just step it back, right? This discussion came about with the notion of what do you do when there is not a LOINC code available to represent what you're trying to represent, right?
Right.
And one of the important use cases where we have been focusing, I'm addressing the fact that Clem's counterargument to let you know there be other codes used other than LOINC was, well, Fire already allows it. That's why I restricted that part to in Fire. I'll say other than LOINC in a Fire observation resource. How's that? That makes sense.
Well, actually, the Fire binding is pretty tight on LOINC. And I think what Ken specifically is worried about, he'd like to get a term in for home blood pressures. And my counter is that there are three at least ways to represent that. And we need a discussion of that before it's just thrown out there. It may be what's needed, but there is a place to say location in FHIR, so you don't have to make a new pre-coordinated term for it. There's also, in LOINC, there are terms that are like not pre-coordinated, the extra ones you put in with the message that can say things like that. And it goes on and on. And then
I don't think this is the part of our document where we're addressing that. This is about orders and results. So we're not into pre and post coordination of blood pressures.
Oh, no.
We're not talking about FHIR here. We're just talking about encoding.
Remind everyone that this came from Sasha from Epic as a recommendation to allow this, right? And she's not here, but.
I think she is.
I am here, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, Sasha.
I mean, our recommendation was a little bit different. We thought it would be helpful to have provisional LOINC codes for the time periods while you're waiting for an appropriate LOINC code to be available. It's been modified somewhat since then. I still think provisional LOINC codes would be helpful for that waiting period. I mean, I think in general, the description of supporting coding when a code is not yet available that's appropriate is reasonable. It's not quite the same as we had originally, though. And it wasn't specific to FHIR in our original suggestion, although I understand FHIR would be one use case.
Yeah, I just think adding FHIR here kind of unnecessarily confuses this discussion. David, did you have a comment?
Well, it was just a question for Sasha. When you say a provisional LOINC code, would that be a code issued by some process at LOINC or a code generated by the vendor and just flagged with the status that we've submitted it to LOINC? In other words, is there a process issue point here of saying LOINC needs to be able to generate provisional codes? Is that what the point is?
Yeah, I think we envisioned a sort of standardized method by which provisional codes could be available that were identified as provisional LOINC codes and then, you know, at some point replaced with more appropriate codes when those became available.
And Sasha, is that distinctly different than what LOINC is doing with their pre-release codes?
I would have to follow up with colleagues to know. I am not sure offhand.
Well, I actually suggested that if LOINC could get some more resources, they could have a pre-release code. It's just that if you don't get any process, it'll be a total mess.
Well, again, this being our last meeting, I don't know that we have time to sort of go back to the people who had concerns. I mean, I think we're trying to acknowledge a number of things here. Where we ended up is in this situation where new tests, observations, methodologies, and instruments are introduced, we've suggested to support the EHR and HIT systems in using local codes when needed to accelerate LOINC's work to move forward new codes and to acknowledge LOINC's pre-release codes and allow their use. So that, again, I don't think we've done anything very controversial here, but in the absence of more time to dig deeper, I'd propose we leave this as is and move on. Does anybody object to that? Hearing none, let's go ahead then to the next set of comments. And that is going to be down on page 13, it looks like. And here we are discussing semantic interoperability and the requirement for industry consensus around information models, including metadata and associated terminologies. So clearly a big area. This, Clem, is where this whole blood pressure, pre and post coordinated topic, is probably more applicable.
I agree. And I agree we can't solve it today.
Okay. So we do have some additional language that you've suggested. LOINC does include panels that present a more post-coordinated approach to blood pressure measurements that specifically call out cuff size, standing versus sitting, and other attributes. In fact, many such panels, however, we probably don't need that, However, expert advice from other sources is needed to create the most useful such panels and to move beyond semantic interchange of simple results. This, I think we're trying to cram a lot in here.
I was trying to preserve the original text. And
right.
And it didn't work. You know, it came from David.
Yeah, this is David. I'm happy that this captures the treetops of the complexity of this issue and, recognizes that simple result approaches don't necessarily automatically extend to more complex results, that more work is needed. But I think we got that. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I would suggest that we sort of try to skinny this down a bit. You know, we don't want to make a mess of our fine work here at the last minute as we're getting it out the door.
Do what you think is best.
I think everything written is pretty reasonable, right? The big picture issue, Clem, and everyone that we're discussing here is you can do only so much with pre-coordinated terms, which allows the simple stuff, but you need post-coordinated models for, you know, appropriately representing some of these things. I think that's totally reasonable, right? It's just the next phase. It's not where we're at now.
All right. So everybody take a look at the language you're seeing. We'll get down to the recommendations in a bit, but in the observations, is anybody uncomfortable with where this ended up? All right. Good. So now let's scroll down to the recommendations section on the same topic about the need for consensus around information models. So quite a number of recommendations that we have here. And Sasha, you've chimed in with some of these, as has Clem. So I added language here, I think, in response to one of your comments, Sasha, at the top here. Well, the long-term goal is to be able to exchange all clinical data with standardized information models and terminologies. In the short term, there is value in identifying and prioritizing the most important data. So that was one thing, because you called out, we need to be clear. Are we talking about everything or just this prioritized list?
I think that resolved my concern, which we talked about in more depth at the previous meeting.
Okay.
Well, I certainly support her idea, but we got to get to everything.
But yeah. Again, and we tried to call the long-term goal is everything, right? And then the next bullet here. This has to do with our discussions with the AMA and or other professional societies. Define standards and expectation of collection, exchange of structured documentation of key observations that should be included in referral requests. Okay.
Maybe the referral request thought is something that's in our closed loop section. Does it make sense here? It's an example, for example, maybe.
This is a recommendation regarding semantic interoperability and information models.
Well, I thought that specific thing was stimulated by the need to have lists of what referees or the referred to physicians.
Yes.
Should be.
Yeah. No, and you're right. And we do address that in the closed loop referral section.
I'm just suggesting this is an example. Referral request is an example of where semantic interchange of structured data may be useful. I think there's other other uses as well that might be even more useful than just in referral requests. I'd like to see it in the result of the referral. What did the consultant actually capture about the patient, so I can incorporate that back into my record. But I think as long as you put in here that this is an example and not a target.
Well, what I was trying to do, because it was focused on getting experts in from the ANA and other places, I wanted to point out and highlight the fact that there's an activity going on, which I think Epic and Cerner and others are involved with, for finding lists of measures and drugs that go with a problem or tied to problem, and I highlighted that below. But it isn't specifically for referral requests, and it's something that's underway, and we don't want to have to start all over from the University of Wisconsin.
I think this
whole discussion may be in the wrong place. I'm not sure we need to even include this example in this section. I think, again, we get to this later on. I'm still on bullet two here. I'm not sure we need to reference any of this referral stuff in this section that's really about industry consensus around information models.
Stephen, I think the point is developing information models requires the support of the clinical community in addition to the standards community. I think that's the point that needs to be captured. The referral part of it is just an example and could be dropped, in my opinion, because we deal with it later. The point here is that you can't just set these complex data lists without clinical input, which may involve a broader group of people than are typically participating in standards bodies, infrastructure standards like FHIR. That was the spirit, I think, of point two. Yeah, there you go.
Well, I just finally broke through my barriers. I'm connecting.
Two cheers for interoperability.
And then, I like that, Ken. This other sentence that you added here, Clem, note big new collaborations are not needed to define terminology standards for many simple observations. I don't know that this adds to the...
You can take it out. I was just trying to... The example was ejection fraction. Well, that's the problem. You don't need to do anything new to get ejection fraction. So if we took that out, we could take out the rest, too. Because it's a simple variable.
Yeah.
But the point that was being made about ejection fraction, and I think I'm the one who brought that up, is not that we don't have a standard code for ejection fraction, but we don't have a standard assumption that ejection fraction is part of a standard interchange. It's not a question of defining the code. It's of defining the clinical content that should be encoded.
Well, that's a good clarification. If we can get that in there, then we can... I didn't pick that up.
Well, sorry if I wasn't very clear. There may be a need to specify exactly what we mean by ejection fraction. Does that have to come from an echo, or can it be a clinician's bedside assessment, or is it based on?
There's actually a number of ways to do it. The echo and
volume. Right. And the point wasn't to define that. The point was to say that if you send me a referral for congestive heart failure, I expect a structured bit of data about the last known ejection fraction, as well as, you know, how much pitting edema do they have, and
I understand what you're saying, but I didn't read it that way now.
Yeah.
You know? And it's to find out what should be sent.
Right.
Okay, Ken, so again, you've taken a stab at modifying this. It now reads, for example, ejection fraction already exists in LOINC, but there is not industry consensus that the information will be exchanged if collected in a system or that a heart failure or referral should include that information. I think that captures what you were saying.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. Excellent. This is bullet three. I think the changes here are largely just editorial. So, Ken, thank you for those. Bullet four is clean. Bullet five, this again was an earlier comment from Clem that we incorporated a couple weeks back. We jumped over bullet three, but it is new. I'm sorry. This Clem pointed out some good work that's being done around, interestingly, by a clinical system that takes advantage of their EHR vendor's functionality to collect relevant data related to problem list items. And they've done a lot of work collecting and sort of specifying what are the relevant lab results or other data that should be considered in the context of a problem. Clem suggested incorporating this here. Here again, I do wonder whether this belongs more down in the section on closed loop referrals and care coordination, you know, as opposed to this section here.
Well, this thing isn't related to that, but it isn't brand new. There was a URL there, but it was just sort of like a lonely one. It didn't make much sense. So I've kind of elaborated on the URL.
Yeah, this is David. I helped get this group launched. I think it's great work, and it is, I think, a good example of what we're talking about here. So I'm perfectly happy to leave it here. I don't think necessarily that what they're building will be all that useful in referrals because of the way they are deciding what's in their tables. But it is an example of clinicians deciding on what coded data is important or may be important for a particular clinical situation as captured in a problem list. So I think it's highly relevant here, but I don't know that it's going to actually be that helpful for referrals.
I don't either. I didn't bring it in for referrals, just related to the clinicians. I agree with what you just said.
You know, they're taking an inclusive expansive, high recall, low precision approach to code their tables for referrals. You want a high recall, low precision. The other way around, high precision, low recall approach. So, you know, different tables are needed for different use cases. But it's really good work, and I helped Carl Dvorak, and I met with him at HIMSS and launch it.
Okay, so we've massaged that one a little bit and feel comfortable that it's in a reasonable spot. On a couple bullets down, where you see the yellow text, this is something that Clem has pointed out to us a number of times in the past, that there are some large files of aggregated test results.
The question about what's equivalent is always, you know, arguable, but this is a classic common reality.
I guess the question for us is how, you know, does this add to what we are attempting to cover here? They're just cleaning out some of the...
Now that I've seen it, I don't think it does. So, but there was another comment about saying there is a lot of difficulty in figuring out which codes to use. That's what I was responding to. I think that sentence is gone.
We have a separate one above this on level of granularity of standard codes differ according to use. So I think we should delete the whole section.
Yeah, this might be a good example of that. Maybe it's a...
Well, yeah, maybe we could pull it into that section, but I agree with everyone. We don't need it here. So don't kill it yet in case we...
I think we already covered this consideration. We just don't have that specific example. I think we can delete this one. We talk about how, like, in some cases you do care about the specific lab magnetism, in others you don't, and the level of granularity that is appropriate may differ according to use case, and we recommend things like, consider seeking interesting consensus on the appropriate approach when there's inconsistent level of granularity, and facilitate the creation of code groupers. I think it's well covered. I think we can delete it.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. And then there was an introduction a little lower down, unified code for units of measure was added. We had simply said units here as a standardized metadata. Here we're actually calling out a specific standard for units, which, again, is fine if we all agree that that is the right standard for units. I personally wasn't aware of UCUM before this.
It's required in FHIR already. And I think in some live reporting in version 2.
Seems like more of a US CDI problem than what we should be diving into that detail here.
Well, then the whole thing maybe should go.
I mean, so can we just, the point we were trying to make was that units was a key piece of metadata. We were not taking it upon ourselves to specify the standard. But again, that's certainly within our charge. So I'm sort of asking, does anyone have any objection to identifying UCUM as the standard or a standard for capturing units?
But Clem, you're the one who suggested adding it. If you want to delete it, that's fine too.
No, I don't. And it actually only says EG. So, but it's what's in the current FHIR standard and has been for a while.
How's that?
Yeah.
You're good with that, everybody?
Yeah.
Ken?
Yeah, okay. Let's go.
Let's move on. All right. And this, Ken, is where you captured the order result status. Again, previously we'd had a separate section for this. Slide up a little bit there. Let me see. I'm on page 14. Yeah, there we go. So we had a separate section for order result status, and here we've called it out as a key piece of metadata. So wanted to be sure people understood where that ended up.
Yeah, that's been essential for all of time.
Yeah, and well, and yet.
Simply because there was a concern that it was buried here. But if you want to unbold it, that's fine too.
Yeah, we just don't use bolding that way in most of the documents. I'm not sure it has specific meaning. Okay, down to the larger section on non-medication orderables needing to be standardized between systems with mapping to standard terminologies. And under our recommendations, we are, scroll down a little bit, in the section on support the harmonization, advancement, and consensus development of standards-based catalogs of orderable tests. So, with mappings to associated code systems and codes with special emphasis on the following domains. So we have lab orders. So here we're talking about orderable tests, lab order details, radiology orders. And here again, looks like we've this whole discussion of pre and post coordination and the acknowledgement that LOINC, RSNA and RADLEX have done some work on this. So again, the question of is this example, does this add value to our document? I don't have any objection to it.
And Stephen, this is Terry. And again, hate to be sidetracking us, but USCDI is also wrestling with this issue of sort of large data sets, of which these are great examples, and sort of what's going to be required to move those through USCDI. So I think this section is really relevant to the next step, which is how do you package these together in a way that allows them to be implemented as easily as possible.
Yeah, the other background on this is already CDA has always required link, this set of link codes for radiology reports, and I think fire does too now. So we may be behind the wave.
So just cite the wave and move on, okay.
Okay, so we address the orderable tests in bullet two. We talk about order panels in bullet three.
So this one I need to explain a little bit. The table of laboratory order panels is like 6 years old now, and it's got only 300 tests in it. Now there's 1,100 or so, and so I just thought the number wasn't helpful, saying 2,000. It was wrong for laboratory. It's right for all panels. And then I took off that reference to the older one, which would be sort of setting the bar pretty low.
So we're looking at the order panels. This is the third bullet under recommendations.
So I actually thought referencing what there is a list of about 300 lab orders, which I thought was not an appropriate list anymore, because there's a lot more lab panels, and there's still a lot of other panels as well, but it just didn't help to tie it to a number, especially since it wasn't right.
So I think we may be mixing up here orderables and panels. So I think
they're very entwined, because regular tests, the orderables are the same as the resultables for most tests. It's only the panels that create stress.
I just think that this highlighted text, we can move it up as a sub bullet just above, is all I'm thinking. Grabbing that. Let me try that again. And move it up here. That's all I was thinking. How does that look? All right.
There's something wrong with something's wrong up here. Should it be 61%?
Okay. Oops.
It's 61%, yeah.
What was the correct number? Was it
8,003? Well, whatever, it's not 655%, yeah. And it's 8,003, right.
Let's say over.
Just back up.
Yeah, the specific numbers are probably not critical.
Well, it's just sort of interesting is what I, those, but maybe it's not necessary, but that's a lot of codes they're mapping.
The one large referral lab has already requested link codes for 61% of its over 8,000 orderable tests. So the gap for link coding.
It really has gotten them. So they've requested another bunch of thousands, a bunch more.
Okay. Hopefully people are following along here and can provide comments. Again, we don't want to mess things up in our work to get done. All right, I think that's fine, Ken. Thank you for that. Okay, then we mentioned order panels. That's now a brief statement. And then we go on to talk about harmonization of multiple existing code sets for orderable tests. Consider terminologies such as CPT, PLA, and link codes. We took out SNOMED CT. Is that because someone determined that they do not address issues of orderable tests?
No, it's that true. We don't want to have multiple code systems if we can avoid it.
Well, no. The point here is we're supporting harmonization of multiple code systems. That's exactly the point. And we identified SNOMED CT and HCPCS as examples of existing code sets. I'm just saying, do SNOMED CT or HCPCS? I mean, I believe HCPCS includes orderable tests. So
yeah, they do.
Yes, I would tend to leave this in because they are examples.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, we're sort of trying to say these are all, there are all these different code sets that require harmonization. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah.
I think the non-panel link codes thing has to go higher. I'm bumping it up.
Yeah, I think we addressed that higher up, right? I think we're being a little perseverative here.
Yeah.
It's not a rare phenomenon.
You know, when you feel strongly about something, I do the same thing. I think this pink text could probably go because I think we've addressed it already, if that's okay.
And I just took that non-panel whatever thing. I just put it a little bit higher just to clarify that it can be used.
Do you want to keep the pink text down here still, Ken?
I don't see what the pink text is, or I don't see pink.
It's blue on the public screen. It's pink in the Google Doc. Loink has growing.
This is Clem.
Yeah, no, I don't think we need. I think it's redundant from what we have above. Is all I'm saying.
Okay, I mean we talked about Loink should be used. So, Clem, are you okay with deleting or do you want to keep it?
Well, I'm not obsessed by it. But I think people sometimes don't realize that there are panels which are challenging because there's so damn many of them. But the non-panel test, there's already a way to order them. Maybe it would belong up higher, the natural place. You guys are amazing at your ability to on-the-fly edit. And so it'd be an interesting challenge if you can find the right place for it.
I think that's fine if we want. I mean, it's... You know, I don't think it hurts to say Loink has a growing number of Loink tests.
Yeah, I just think, well, I'll just move it up above. That's all. I think it has a nice spot up above.
I think you have a unique talent. It actually works that you can do this.
Well, I don't think it's under orderable tests. But I think it's under panels, I think.
Okay. Got it. You're right. It goes the next bullet down.
There. So, yeah, it would be a sub-bullet under that one, actually.
Okay. Sorry. We're doing the same thing.
Like dueling banjos.
Uh-huh. Something like that. All right. So this section has morphed a bit, but I think it's held together. And then I think we can scroll down to...
Could I just...
deletion that I'm not sure was intentional. Stephen, I think you deleted a loink I thought that was actually...
No, it got caught. It's caught up above. It's under the orderable tests, the A-Link stuff up there.
Or like under on page 15, let's see, the further,
So here, I'm highlighting where we have the reference to A-Link. It was taken out and then moved. It's on toward the bottom of page 15. Yeah.
Okay. And then there was something about a LOINC SNI, ONC LOINC order code SNI. Is that right? It's not a LOINC A-Link order code SNI?
The SNI thing relates to the 300 set of order codes. It's now 6 or 7 years old that I thought wasn't the best thing to highlight since there's a lot more panels and orders and everything else in there.
Then we should delete it.
And I think the SNI one was mostly dealing with panels. If not entirely. This thing, the common amateur order code value sets, is a list of about 300 panels. And it's old and it's not, there's a lot more in there now. And if
okay,
you constrain
so it,
to,
can we just say lab orders using LOINC universal lab orders? Is that just remove the reference to like that?
I think you could.
I mean, you're the expert, so you tell us whether you prefer to have it.
Well, I prefer not to reference that thing, which is, should be updated, because if you go to the full LOINC file, you'll find a whole lot more lab panels.
I think that's fine. Again, somebody suggested we put it in. If nobody's here to defend it, taking it out seems fine.
Now, there's one thing that I didn't comment on, but I just worry about, because it said down lower, you were at the page, that you can't have feed panels, but then you say something about CPT. And I don't know which one is right, but I just be aware that it'll be contradictory. I'm not taking a side.
Again, the statement is that we want to support and assure the harmonization of multiple existing code sets for orderable tests.
No, further down, though, it says not fee-based. And I think CPT is already in FHIR as a meaningful use as an option, CPT. So I'm just highlighting the contradiction. We maybe should soften the not fee-based or prefer not.
I think big picture, like if there isn't something already written, we just need to move on. We only have like half an hour to finish.
All right, I'm happy. Go ahead. Move.
And actually, I think we have public comments at the quarter hour, so we need to remember that. Okay, we are should be moving down to page 17, where Ken, you added a bullet of recommendation, enable an opt-in approach to earlier results release. This is the notion of we had a lively discussion about this, such as results release as soon as final results are available. For example, if a patient specifies their preferences to immediately receive results regardless of the content, e.g. a pathology report which may indicate cancer, and should be reviewed with a physician to properly interpret, work towards enabling such preferences to be honored.
We discussed it pretty extensively, so I just put in writing what we discussed but didn't have time to put in writing during the meeting.
Yeah, so I like that, and I think it definitely expresses what a number of folks were stating, that we're not going to convince the industry that immediate release is right for everybody, but the idea of giving patient control over that, because the concern is we don't want patients to be complaining that they got informed of something prematurely. All right. We can scroll down to page 18. We are now into our Tier 2 issues and recommendations, and we're talking about needing a standard way to differentiate the type of results within CCDAs. And so I think as opposed to four, it's within CCDA documents. And again, a lot of our focus here has been on fire, but we all still live in a world largely populated by data that comes in CCDAs. So we've sort of added a comment, Ken, about fire within this section on the CCDA challenge. Consider using the fire diagnostic report category codes. So this is the codes themselves, or an expanded version of the same. So this is sort of saying that, you know, some work has been done on this in the fire world, and perhaps this could be brought back into CCDA.
Yeah, it seems reasonable.
It would be good to do them the same way.
Yeah.
I think that both of them need work still, but separate.
Good. Okay, uncontroversial. We can now scroll down to the very top of page 20, where Sasha, you had a comment that I attempted to address in some new language. You comfortable with that? You can expand Sasha's comment. She can see the full context there. Thanks.
Yeah, I think this is fine. This is related to my other comment that there were two sections on prior auth, and the other section was specific to meds, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to be clear in each context what we were referring to. So this is helpful, I think, to keep everyone on the same page as to the scope.
Agree. It's important to.
Super. All right. Scrolling down just a bit, we are in the section where results. Data exchange between HIT systems may not include sufficient provenance. Yes, we spent a lot of time talking about provenance. And Clem, through Liz, added some observations here. So we had talked about result data may not include sufficient provenance data, and then Clem's pointing out that the fire observation identifier can be useful in this regard.
Well, I just want to point out that I actually didn't know this 2 months ago, but there is one of the IDs in the observation record is persistent, and it can be used for deep duplication. Not all the things that provenance wants, but...
Just because it's kind of late, I'm just changing it to could provide, because we don't have time to really bet whether that will provide what's needed.
Well, I think it does provide it. It's a unique identifier.
We don't have time to... Right, like we're putting this in with like 1 minute or review. I think we should say could provide.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we need the second bullet there because we're calling it out specifically.
Oh no, actually we should because they're developing a specific resource on provenance. It's a separate issue. We need to.
So separate from the identifier or resource.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a more important issue because provenance is far more than just that identifier.
Exactly.
Okay.
Albeit that is a necessary but not sufficient component.
But it wasn't clear from the text that we were aware of that, and I just wanted to be sure we were.
Okay. Sasha, you have a comment here. If you can scroll down just a little bit. In our review with internal clinicians, we've seen source organization clinic to be far more valuable and consistent than the user who administered, ordered, or documented the result. And I just responded that, you know, clinicians want to know the actual origin of the data in addition to the immediate source that by which it was sent to them. But I certainly appreciate your comment. Can we resolve that one or do some more?
Yeah, I don't know that they needed further edits or anything.
I think it's interesting facts, though, and I think it's probably true because the providers are, you know, you got residents, it's hard to know who's really the who. But I'm fine with it, too. And I think Sasha's comment really was apropos, though.
Yeah. Okay. Ricky has a comment here about provenance being in the NPRM and should be mentioned here. So the here being under policy levers.
I think it's under observations. This topic was brought up in the latest ONC NPRM, and is also a topic being worked on as a part of the Argonaut project. Can you scroll up a little bit on the main screen? Yeah, that last sentence before recommendations. So I think that addresses it.
Okay. We've got 3 minutes to go. So the next one, Sasha, we're down to the section on need vendors to send unique reference IDs for results data. In our experience, this should be tier one. Ah, this was a whole question about tier one. I agreed. Liz agreed. Everyone agreed. Ken, can you swipe this piece and take it up to tier one?
It's accepted, and I'll move it to the bottom of tier one.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. Okay, tampering. Then we're down to closed-loop referrals. We've done this fairly recently. Jack had a section, a comment about confusion. This section is confusing as it partly overlaps with the referral management section below. Perhaps we could...
Sorry, and that ID part, Clem had made a note that this applies to things other than orders and results. I'll just make a comment that this applies to things other than orders and results.
Thanks. So, Jack, you're on, aren't you?
I'm on. I think we the last few times we talked about it, we slowly broadened the section to the point where there's significant overlap between this section and the section below.
Do you think it's unacceptable in its current format?
I don't think it's unacceptable, but then we also have to do some work to make sure they say the same things. There are some things where right now there are recommendations sort of split between two sections.
It's going to be a challenge to get it done by tonight.
But I think this is more of a... It doesn't have to be done, I guess, but it's just slightly confusing.
Yeah, I think we just don't have the time. So I agree, but we can't really deal with it in time.
That makes sense.
And I think your comments further down on page 28 are sort of related to the same thing, sort of the opportunity to reorganize that section a bit. Jack, you also made some specific suggestions down on page 29, which we should just go through real quick. This has to do with patient-clinician electronic messaging. Patient-clinician electronic messaging is currently supported principally within proprietary and provider-specific EHR-integrated patient portals. I think that's fair. Most patient portals also do not support multi-party messaging capabilities, even when all care providers are from the same institution. I think that's also an accurate observation. So I'm comfortable with that. And then under recommendation, again, we're on page 30 now. But let's pause right on time for public comment. I think we're at that point now, aren't we? So let's go to public comment and then try to resolve these issues.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. There are no comments at this time.
Great. All right.
Just an editorial note. We have a duplicate between the send around metadata and for unique reference IDs and metadata. I'm not going to try to fully address it, but I just moved the notion on fire observation IDs to the one on IDs, and I'm moving the related tier two recommendation higher up just so that it's next to each other. So I don't think anything controversial, but I'm just moving some things around.
So let's go back to page 30. Jack, I think you worked with Cynthia and introduced a graphic here. So we are in recommendations around patient-clinician electronic messaging. The recommendation was to require all HIPAA-covered entities to implement an externally accessible direct XMPP server. Wow. That serves as the gateway for all patient-physician conversations at the institution. That's a very specific recommendation and requirement.
Yeah, that would take a ton of work.
I think
in the comments state that I think we should discuss this, and I was purposely making a strong statement to prompt the discussion. But this is essentially some of what allowed SMS to interoperate. And this also follows from some of the Clem's comments about making sure that patients have the ability to access messaging in whatever way they prefer, but still centralizing messaging so that they could be communicated between different parties.
Well, so I think Ken's trying to soften this language a little bit.
I also want about specifying it in terms of the function to be achieved rather than the technology to do it. You know, find ways to permit SMS to be exchanged, as you just said, Jack, you know, rather than say use this specific technology. That's usually not a happy receipt.
The technology that I mentioned was specifically around just the gateways that are talking to each other. I don't know if you can see the diagram. Basically, it just forces, for example, so Stanford can theoretically allow any patient communication method. So it could be through email, it could be through SMS, it could be through Snapchat if they want. But the suggestion is that basically then Stanford has to consolidate all of this messaging through some sort of mobile gateway. I put direct XMPP just because that's what the current healthcare standard tends to be, even though there's low usage. And they provide that specific gateway for an external provider or external user to basically synchronize with.
I think this is good as you just fixed it. Is it, who's doing that editing? Is that you, Ken? Man, these are good.
Right.
It's sort of like those instance translators typing in the words on the screen.
But I would agree that, you know, gateway is the operative word, not direct / XMPP server. I mean, that's so technologically specific for such an ill-defined notion.
Is it okay the way it is now to say explore such as? I mean, it weakens it quite a bit to just say, like, you know, obviously we can't decide this in 1 minute, but can we decide?
Well, I'm okay with it. I just would suggest drop the direct XMPP server and just say implement an externally accessible gateway for all patient physician conversations at the institution. That's the goal, is to have a gateway, not to specify that it be direct / XMPP, which are two essentially immiscible technologies at the moment. Now,
and I think the graphic is too much. We don't have any other such graphics in the document.
Yeah, and it's not very, I mean, it's, yeah,
but,
I agree.
But thanks for the work, Jack, anyway.
And
I'm
the
happy
gateway
to weaken the
language,
and the graphics was more, I think, for us internally, because I was not articulate enough to be able to write out what I wanted to say in the graphics.
Okay.
The gateway idea is key here, is cross-modality messaging is a challenge that needs to be thought about.
Okay. So I think we captured that. Thank you so much, Jack, for bringing that idea forward. Okay, we're going to jump over the care plan, the closed loop exchanges. If we jump down into medication pharmacy data, Ed, you offered some edits on page 35. RTPB is used to confirm the price of prescribed medication, provide appropriate patient-specific and benefit-specific therapeutic. Okay, that's just clarifying text. We keep going back and forth around this issue of total cost, total out-of-pocket cost. So you said cash, troop, and total retail. Yeah, and I think that's fine. We've done that in other places.
Right, just total cost information.
You know, we might put in something in there that says, I don't think we know the right terminology, where they say, if we could admit that, never mind, it'll just take time, forget it.
Did we want to put in total retail cost? I know we had talked about that, or do we just want to use it?
We got it. We got it in there.
Oh, no, I was recommending total cost information to take out retail. Just because the term retail sometimes isn't really a term of art. So just using the term total cost.
Okay. I think I might have slipped that in there because it helped me understand, but that's fine. Okay. So we total drug cost data, alternative drugs. Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that.
And I don't think we should say up to three.
That's too specific, I think, for
that
us.
That was just an example. I think that's good as is.
So we are closing in current NCPDP telecom standards allows up to four drugs. So this is an observation.
We could pass through that. That was just explaining the
okay.
Yeah.
And then further down, there is the use of shared patient savings is called the October 3rd. We should probably put in 2019. Someday this will be looked at historically.
And this was just tying to current initiatives to support, accelerate the work that we're recommending as well.
Okay. Well, maybe we should call out that you got the title of the executive order here, so we'll copy that in.
I'll do it. You can move on.
Okay, great. Then you go on to talk about under the policy levers, responsibilities. We have ONC include a requirement for real-time patient-specific formulary and pharmacy benefit checks, and you added and automatic delivery in the EHR at the time of prescribing.
I think the purpose of that was just that physicians may not have the time to kind of hunt the information themselves throughout the EHR if it wasn't automatically available in the EHR. So it's more of a provider workflow.
I'm going to just put once validated and sufficiently validated, right? So, for example, I would hate it if a health system had to do this and incur, say, a 25% charge in every single case for a cheap medication that we always know is going to cost, $4 generic, like, and incur a $5 charge or whatever, right? Like, this is along Sasha's comment of be very careful saying put something in certification requirements until we're absolutely certain that it really makes sense.
Yeah, alert fatigue and driving physicians nuts, but...
So, Ed, you then have a comment about whether we should mention CMMI demonstration projects.
Just towards the end of the Medicare Part D programs, I weren't sure if, we again, similar to the October 3rd executive order, if we want to mention the CMS demonstration projects. I think there's a Part D payment modernization project that, again, is very similar in spirit to sort of what we are recommending in this section. Again, didn't know if we want to...
Still falls under Part D, right?
Yes, it would, yes. It's a CMS demonstration project, Part D.
Yes, I think we've captured that. All right. And I think that we have reconciled every single comment.
Oh, my goodness.
You guys are miracle workers. Miracle workers.
So this task force has done tremendous work over the last, I didn't count up the months, has it been 16 or 18 months? And we are going to submit this as our recommended report to the HITACH next week. And Ken and I will be in front of that group, sort of representing all of you and the fine work that you've done. Again, if there are comments or specific suggestions that come back from the HITACH review between today and next Wednesday, we will get back to all of you to discuss those. But our hope is that that this will be approved by the HITACH and then transmitted from the HITACH to the national coordinator as the result of our work as called for within 21st Century Cures. So I see we've lost some participants here toward the end. Any comments anybody has before we close up?
Thanks, everyone. I'm so glad we finished on time.
Compliments to the two chefs.
Yeah.
Good job.
I'm in. Great job.
Good job.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful Friday.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We will officially adjourn our meeting. Have a great rest of the day.